Hello, welcome to Mood Swings. How is everyone? In this intro, I actually have a couple of things I need to say, so I'm going to try not just do my usual and talk total nonsense for 3 minutes before introducing the guest. At the start of lockdown and the coronavirus stuff, I put out an Instagram post and kind of said that I was going to do three interviews per week, or three podcasts per week on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And that lasted about a week, I think, before I missed days, and then I ended up having a couple out each week. Pretty much that was for a couple of reasons. I became quite aware quite early into that I completely forgotten that I have limited server space on the hosting website that I use to publish the podcast and host it, etc. And that three podcasts a week was probably going to exceed what I have available to me. And I also kind of just didn't really think about how much... when you take your job out of the equation and you think that, could just be sitting at home all day, I kind of almost overestimated how much time I would have and underestimated how much time it takes to actually not only record the podcasts, but, you know, edit them, do all the kind of promotion, and also arrange more guests to come on and you know, it takes a little bit of time to get all that sorted out. So yeah, there was a couple of factors I didn't really consider properly, I suppose would be the best way to say it. And yeah, you're still going to get, I aim for at least two podcasts per week, probably Monday and Friday going forward. The last one that came out was last Wednesday. This one will be coming out this Wednesday, so it's been a week's break. But yeah, and this week it'll be Wednesday and Friday. But I'm going to try and have them out Monday and Friday each week, if that works best for people. Or it might be a little bit more relaxed than that. You might get one on a Tuesday, one on a Friday. I don't know. But the point is, I'm aiming to get at least two out per week. If I've got more recorded and I've got the server space available, then I'll stick out maybe three in a week. We'll just need to see how we go. It's kind of strange. Like I say, I think when I first got all this time to myself, I thought it would only be for a couple of weeks. So I thought maybe doing three in a week would be feasible for a couple of weeks. But now that this is going to go on for longer and longer, I don't have the resources, I suppose, to put out three podcasts every week. Also, another factor, I've talked about this for too long now, but another factor is that originally I thought that my guests would only want to speak to me for like 20 minutes, and that all the podcasts would be dead quick, so they'd be shorter, so everything would be much more manageable. But I like to talk. I love speaking to the people that I get on here, and I've been luckily enough that they've committed a good bit of their time to speak to me. So the podcast would end up being a bit longer and a bit more kind of thorough than I would have anticipated. But that's a positive thing. So yeah, less is more is ultimately what I'm trying to say. Anyway, this podcast this week, or the first one of this week, is with a guy who you'll know if you've kept up with the podcast for a few years. He is the ex-MTGP, so it was Muay Thai Grand Prix, European champion. He's fought at a really high level in Muay Thai, and he references the fight in this podcast, actually, but one of my favourite fights and favourite knockouts ever. It's Shane O'Neill. I can't remember if it was a one-part or a two-part episode, but he was good enough to speak to me the night before he fought on Muay Thai Grand Prix a couple of years back, one summer when I was visiting London. I just met him, and then kind of like 10, 15 minutes later, we started recording the podcast. We talked for a good while. We talk all about this again on this podcast. It was just a really great chat. As soon as I decided to do these catch-up podcasts, Shane was someone that I really hoped I'd be able to get in touch with and get back on, because I really enjoyed it so much the first time, and I knew that he'd have a good take and good things to say, interesting things to say about what's going on in the world at the moment. And also I knew that in Shane's life a lot of things have changed, and he's been through, like you say, he won that European title. He's gone on to do a whole host of things, some of them which we speak out on this podcast and some which we don't. He is the striking coach for Darren Stewart, who fights in the UFC. So Shane's been all over the world, you know, coaching him and going to these huge UFC events and being part of that, which is something we don't talk about as much on this episode. And hopefully I'll be able to speak to Shane again and speak to him more about all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I just knew that there was definitely more than enough for a great episode here. So I was absolutely thrilled to have Shane back on. He's got his own podcast now, so if you enjoy listening to him, which I'm sure you will, go and look up the, I can't say it, but it's The Crack Epidemic, but it's Irish Crack, so it's C-R-A-I-C. I can't pronounce it properly because I'm not Irish and I would hate to do an injustice, but yeah, he's got his own podcast, Crack Epidemic. It's on Spotify. I'll post links in the bio and all that to this. He's also doing a beginner's Muay Thai class and an intermediate to advanced Muay Thai class. The beginner's one is on Saturdays on Instagram. His Instagram will be listed below wherever you're listening to this, or if you really can't find it, message me, or he'll be tagged in the post on Instagram. You'll find him. So the beginner's class is Saturdays 11 till half 11 on Instagram Live, and the intermediate to advanced class is over Zoom. You have to get in touch with Shane to do that one. That's on Tuesdays at 8:15 till 9 a.m. I did that this morning for the first time and it was absolutely brilliant. It was actually a really good feeling to do some Muay Thai and learn. Like I've been lucky enough that I'm able to train with my girlfriend in the flat. She also trains Muay Thai a bit, and we're able to have a dance about the living room and hold pads for each other with what kind of equipment we have. But it was absolutely brilliant to, I suppose, be coached and learn a little bit again. I forgot how much I enjoy that feeling. It's probably something I've taken for granted over the last wee while. It's like, you know, you learn the basics of Muay Thai and then you just want to spar and hit pads hard all the time. But you're kind of getting coached consistently, but you don't really take it in as much. But I forgot how much I love that feeling of learning something new or just working on a specific skill set. So yeah, I absolutely loved that this morning. I knew it was going to be good, but I enjoyed it even more than I expected. This is the longest intro in ages and there's a great podcast waiting for you, so I'm going to shut up now. But thank you to Shane and thank you all for listening. Stay safe. Cheers. So I'm speaking via the internet to Shane O'Neill. How you doing, Shane?
Doing very well, bud. Thanks, Nathan. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Are you in London just now, or are you back in Ireland?
In London, by London.
Yeah. How's London been in with the lockdown and all the coronavirus stuff?
It's been different. Like, weird energy around the place. It's been a bit like, I suppose, best way I could describe it is a bit tense. That's why I think, anyway, that's the energy I feel. Like, I think people are very, like, obviously you don't see much people because everyone's indoors, but when you go shopping and that, I feel like everyone's very wary of each other, and I think it's a silly way to be, really. Everyone's almost paranoid about people around them, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a bit funny here. It's a bit funny.
How long has it been like that in London? Because it's obviously taken a little while for things to kind of change the same way up here as that we'll have done in London. So it must be quite a while now that things have been different.
Well, like, I think the Cage Warriors was on March 21st or March 20th.
Yeah.
And I think on the week leading up to that, it started getting a bit funny. People started cancelling their PTs with me. People weren't wanting to come to the gym. Classes were quiet. And then we went to Manchester for Cage Warriors that weekend. That was the last sporting event in the UK for, like, probably for a while. But that was the weekend that the lockdown, on the Monday we got back, on the Monday that we got back, the lockdown was announced, and ever since then it's just been like, yeah, been a bit funny.
Yeah, I remember watching that, the Cage Warriors on the Friday night. I fought the Saturday previous to that, and then I was quite surprised that the Cage Warriors went ahead, but was there any ever...
Graham Boylan, like, Graham, in fairness to Graham, like, he jumped over fucking, he jumped through hoops to get that show on, because And I agree with him. Like he was, I think, a group of young, healthy athletes, and it was a very well-run event. At the weigh-ins, there was a doctor there testing people for symptoms, like everything like that. So these fighters had trained so hard, to get an opportunity to fight on a show like Cagewater. It was behind closed doors in a venue in my opinion, it was the right thing to do, put on a show like that. But some people disagree with it, saying, look, whatever else. But I don't know, from my point of view, that there was no elderly or sick people in attendance to get sick from, and everyone was going home afterwards after competing and after having some entertainment. So
how was it being at an event without a crowd, at a closed doors event, as to say?
Yeah, it was different as well. I've been at the BT Sports Studios a few times when Cage Warriors events are there, and that's like a 200 or maybe 300 seater venue, and obviously it's on BT Sports, so in between they you can't be making as much noise and movement and stuff, and that even it was just to be honest, the fights still are the fights, and it's still good crack to watch fights, but I would definitely think it was an eerie feeling for the fighters. For me, it was grand. I was just coaching and spectating, but for the fighters it was different, I imagine.
Yeah. And you were there with Darren Stewart, coaching him.
Darren O'Gorman and Darren Stewart, two Darrens. Double D, as we call them.
Yeah. What was your thoughts on, obviously the UFC was meant to go ahead on Saturday, and having worked with Darren Stewart, you know a little bit more about the UFC and the way it works than most do. Did you anticipate that those events would go ahead last weekend, or did you kind of always think that they would hit a roadblock somewhere along the way?
I knew that Dana White was a bit mad, he's trying his best to put the shows on and stuff, but I knew he'd be met with some, and because we've been at events there now in the last year or two, when Dana White's not giving a speech to me, but to Darren Stewart, they get the fighters in the back room after weigh-ins, public weigh-ins, and they give a speech, obviously, to get people pumped up, saying, there's going to be a lot of eyes on you, perform, and blah, blah, blah. And he always says, now that we're owned by Disney, you can't be using swear words, Conor can't be using swear words. So that was always in the back of my mind, thinking Dana White can say all he wants, but he doesn't run the show anymore. So I did think, to be honest, I didn't think it was a bit ambitious. I was hopeful. I was saying it would be great to happen. But when you have a corporation the size of Disney in charge of a company, they don't want to be seen as putting people at risk or doing stuff against the grain.
Yeah.
Disney aren't exactly the most rebellious company. Are they? I can't really think of any examples of Disney doing stuff that was rebellious.
No, not really. I didn't actually realize Disney were in charge of UFC until all this occurred.
Yeah. Well, it's the same parent company. It's not like Disney, but they're the same company over Disney is on UFC. So it's the same system, same kind of corporate ladder or whatever.
What do you think of the whole Fight Island concept? It's a bit it's a bit Enter the Dragon, is it not?
Yeah, it's fucking. I think it would be great, but and again, I don't know what he was thinking with that, because even if he does get Fight Island, he still is, the shots are still called above him. So I don't know, maybe it'd be cool to get Fight Island as a concept going forward, to do some reality TV shows or to do some big events on. Mm-hmm. And you have to think about spectators, how a spectator is going to get there. Obviously it's great during a pandemic if you need to put on shows but no crowds. But then again, even so, he's not making the calls. So if Disney won't leave the fights happen, what's the point in having a Fight Island now?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. It'll
be interesting to see if that does get sanctioned. Maybe they can start up on Fight Island ahead before events on the mainland can start up again or whatever.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, I don't know. Because that's another thing, is how are we going to go back to normality is the question. I don't know. I haven't heard any government plans or anything like that about it, but they probably will need to do something like that in the near future, just to get events on before crowded events are allowed to come back again.
Yeah. I think it'll be quite a while before sporting events are back. And I've seen that apparently there's a government a 3-step plan, but then apparently they've said that wasn't them and that was falsified, with big events kind of coming back towards July. But I think that's maybe a bit ambitious. Yeah.
I think unless you hear it from Boris or someone on news, you can't really believe a lot of these things going around. They're just being shared. I'm not a medical expert by any means, but I feel once this initial impact has stopped, I think this 3 weeks, hopefully after this 3 weeks, we should start to go back to some form of normality, because for the economy and for people's mental health and stuff, you need to. Obviously, elderly people and people who have immune incompetencies or whatever, they'll have to be a bit more cautious for a long time, and that's unfortunate. But sporting events where, again, young, healthy people want to go and watch the event, like, if you, hopefully by July, like, I can't see, because then you have things in as well, like, what's going to happen if it keeps going on? Like, will sporting events just become weird for the rest of history? It'll be like, yeah, people rather than a crowd is funny, like. It's a mad time, to be fair, Nate, mad time.
It is. I don't think things will ever be completely the way they were before, after all is over.
I said though to my missus that, like, I'm making a freaking point that, like, once the social distancing stops, everyone I meet, I'm going to hug them. Just give them a big hug. Just because I think people will be funny about touching people, and I'm going to just break the ice, start hugging and licking people and stuff.
licking people, is that you getting back to normal?
Well, no, like, it's a bit further than I usually go, but you have to kind of, if you want to break the ice, you have to do something fucking, something that'll make an impact, like.
Yeah. And how break are you coping? How are you coping yourself with being away from the gym and away from training? Obviously, it's a big shift for yourself.
Yeah. I miss the lads in the gym, and I miss my colleagues, the other coaches and stuff, and I miss, like, training in a group atmosphere and stuff. But as I just said to you before we started the podcast, like, I've actually used it as a, I've been always, like, a martyr for doing a million things and, like, doing too many. And since I stepped back from fighting, the coaching's taken off a bit, and I've had other things, like, I've started doing my own podcast. Actually, to be honest, when I done that podcast with you the first time, and you said to me afterwards, you go, you should do your own podcast, but you talk way too much. And then it kind of took me a while to get there, but I did it eventually. And, like, things that I was putting on the long finger, I was like, you know what, use this time as a time to actually reflect on what I'm like, why am I feeling, I've always just filled my days, like, constantly being busy from the morning I wake, or from the second I wake up in the morning to the time I get to bed. I keep myself going, and it's all good stuff. I love what I do, but it definitely was a chance for me to say, like, I have a kid on the way now, like, my missus is pregnant, so I'm having a kid in September, so a time to reflect on, like, all right, what do I need to be doing time wise like, how can I make an income without being constantly busy, and how can I get my training in? So, like, just it's been a time to reflect, really. But I've actually been using it without the sense of impending doom going on in the outside world. In my own little bubble, it's been quite good. But I think there's a Viktor Frankl book called Man's Search for Meaning. Do you know that book?
No.
It's a book. Viktor Frankl was a German psychologist, and he was in the concentration camps. He was a Jewish guy, and he wrote a book when he was in concentration camp called Man's Search for Meaning. And what he talks about is the stimulus. Like, in life, you get a stimulus, so something happens, and then you have a response. So you respond to that stimulus. But, like, if you can catch yourself in that moment in between the stimulus and the response, and you can control the response you give. And I always take kind of, like, power in that. Like, you know, you don't have to respond. Like, you can control the way you respond to the outside circumstances. We can't control what's going on right now, really. Like, but what we can control is how we react to it, and also our health. Like, I've find it funny, like, people using it as a time to drink and, like, eat, like, indulge in bad foods and stuff. Like, if there is a virus out there that is as serious as we're being told it is, you should be doubling down on health, like, and making sure, don't get me wrong, like, having a few drinks on once a week or whatever, like, having something to eat, but, like, some people are using this as almost a chance to just to get pissed up and eat your food. Like, just be careful of that, like, you know. I'm not talking about like, enjoying yourself, that's totally fine, but, like, just be aware. I feel my message to people now when I'm talking to them is just, like, be aware of your health, and you are in control of your health, like, for at least somewhat, like, you know. There is obviously people get sick and have illnesses, and we all get old, and unfortunately that is life. Like, you live and you die, so don't get too attached to it, but just try as best you can when you are, I suppose, reflecting on stuff, like, just try to realize what are you doing with your health, what are you putting into your body, are you training, are you doing the things to make you the strongest version of yourself possible? I'm sure when you fought, you were feeling good and strong.
Yeah, felt good.
Exactly, so, strong human, that's it, boy. You're able to fight off coronavirus.
Well, actually, it's funny that I'm not actually talking about this, but after the fight, I remember that was, like, the last time being with a big crowd of people and hugging everyone, and I was obviously covered in sweat. And then I remember the week after that, I was back at work, and everything about the coronavirus was starting to become kind of more real to me. I was like, fuck, I was like hugging and sweating all the people. Yeah, but yeah, if I fucking point back to like 20 people, I've got it.
That's another thing. Like, it's like that kind of thought. That's something that everyone's saying, you know, like not wanting to be responsible for making other people sick. Like that is a, like, obviously it's a real issue or whatever, but like at the end of the day, boy, like this virus is going to be here. Like same as there's plenty of other viruses. Guilt is an emotion you can't really use to make rational decisions. Like that's probably, like, people are going to be thinking, oh, when things go back to normal, like that's still going to be in the back of the subconscious, you know, if I hug people or if I shake hands, what if I infect someone, even if you feel fine yourself. That it's a funny one, isn't it? Like I feel a lot of people are like that, like I don't want to make someone sick, I don't want to spread it, I don't want to. And it's like, my view on it is, this is going to have to get through. It's not like the virus is going to go, ah, fuck, lads, they batten down the hatches, let's head off, go somewhere else, go to another planet. The virus is here for the duration, so we just might as well. I think this kind of time was used to try and help the NHS and the healthcare system so they wouldn't have an overflow and have like a massive influx of people, and that would have had a detrimental effect on everyone who needs healthcare. But once we do get some control on it, people have to just go out and just, as I said, be healthy as much as you can. Don't fucking use fear or guilt as an emotion to make decisions. Hug and kiss everyone and fucking have the crack.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just going to ask you quickly about the last time I spoke to you was the night before you fought on the Liam Harrison, Charlie Peters show.
Yeah.
And then you went on from then to win MTGP European title.
Yeah.
But did you say, have you taken a step back from fighting at the moment for yourself?
Yeah, but to be honest, I don't think I've said it out loud, but I think I am retired. Like I don't have any urge to go back into the ring at all. I feel like it's a chapter of my life that is done. And it's not like I'm actually happy with what I've done. I'm very proud of what I've done. And I feel there is probably bits of me that think, you know, the world title was something that I didn't achieve and that I possibly could have achieved. But if you're always looking, if you're basing your kind of finish point on accolades, there's always going to be something else to chase. So I just found that I felt the fire I always had in me to compete and to win and to like train hard and to do and have 100% focus on fighting, that flame was dwindling. And actually, to be honest, there was a lot of stuff going on in my personal life. And when I met you that time, that was a big fight for me because I'd lost the fight the previous April and my head wasn't really in the fight. Like I had a lot of stuff going on and I didn't focus and I wasn't disciplined with my focus. Like I was kind of letting my attention be pulled elsewhere when I shouldn't have, and I ended up losing that fight. And then that fight in July was a big, I had a very good fight camp. I was very strict with my focus, my discipline, didn't leave myself be drained from other elements, parts of my life. And when I fought that fight, I won, I had a great performance. But then on the Sunday, my mother had a brain aneurysm, like she suffered a brain aneurysm. So I had to fly back to Ireland on the Monday. My mum went into emergency surgery and I was at home for like 6 weeks after that. Just fucking, like, thankfully everything worked out. She's actually, for what happened to her, she's doing very well, you know. She's like almost back, like she regained full cognitive and motor functions and stuff. Her memory's good. But it was a scary time and, like, there was other stuff going on that could have played a part in that happening to her, or definitely played a part in that happening to her. And it wasn't me fighting or anything, but, like, she did always get quite stressed when I was fighting. And I'd say, like, that wasn't the main reason. Like I said, the fire was always a bit like I was being pulled in other places. And I think it was a few things happened. When I was at home for that few weeks, I wasn't working. So I ended up being in a bit of a financial stress, then coming back over to London after being home for 6 weeks. Thankfully, I'm in a job where I get to make the choice. Like I was able to just say to my clients, I'm not working, I'm staying home, you know, my mum's sick, whatever. So there was no stress that way. The owner of the gym was cool and the lads covered my classes. So I was lucky in that sense. But when I came back over, then not having kind of having to borrow money and stuff, and I was just like thinking, I'm at an age now where I need to be thinking about my future, and fighting is brilliant and it gave me a lot, it made me the person I am today. But it wasn't going to give me that financial kind of security or push to go where I need to go in life. And the decision I made was like, just, I still love the sport, love fighting, love everything about it, but I'm just not going to put that energy into that place, which is takes a lot. You know yourself, anyone who competes knows how much mental space it takes up, time. Like every decision you make in your day in fight camp is based around fight. Like what you're eating, what time you go to bed, what time you get up, what you do in between those hours, it's all based on the fight. So it's very hard then to chase other, I suppose, other opportunities. And I just felt like it was time. And then I got offered the European title fight. And to be honest, it was the hardest fight camp I ever had, because I definitely had the worry, I suppose, everything that was after going on, financial stress, my man getting sick and all that. It was just a hard fight to get motivated for. But I kept reminding myself of the young Shane who walked in the doors of Cork Thai Boxing Gym. And if the European title was put in front of that boy, well, he would have done it to get it. So I just persevered as much as I could. By, and I had a lot of some friends that I leaned on for help and got the belt, thankfully.
Yeah. Did you kind of feel in the build-up to that fight that was maybe going to be your last one, like, as you were...
Yeah, in my head, I probably didn't disclose it to anyone at the time, but like, it was such, like, if I'm being honest, I wouldn't say it was depression. It was just like, I probably needed to be putting my energy into just dealing with the shit that was going on in my personal life. But instead, I had all that energy that I had to put into a fight camp. So waking up in the mornings, I felt really like a pull in my, like, I felt like there was a resistance to training the whole time and to being in that kind of place. Like, and I think part of it was the fact that I was like in financial trouble. My brain was like, you know, you need to be, because again, for that 8-week fight camp, you have to sacrifice work. Like, you can't be, if you're training twice a day, you have to rest as well and all that. So, and then getting up in the mornings was tough, but everything was tough. And then when I won the belt, people say this, like, it's mad. I'm just going to be honest about it. Like, when I had the belt around me, I was sitting after the fight and I got cut, like, so I was getting bandaged up and that, and I remember people were saying like, oh, it's amazing why you won the belt, and then my head just kept thinking, thank god that's over, like, it was like,
yeah,
over, like. And it's mad, like, obviously on reflection I'm so happy and proud and great. It was the best, like, it is one of the best achievements, something I'll take to my grave, that I'm European champion. But in that moment, like, just after the fight, if I'm being honest, I was just thinking, phew.
Yeah.
If I lost, I would have been worse, but I don't know what I would have done. And I would think I was lucky by as well. Like, that was a close fight. Your man gave me a very good run for my money, and like, it was the only fight ever that I tried to just rely on skill and think about points, scoring, and usually I was getting involved in a scrap. But I tried to work on, like, being more of a Thai boxer.
Yeah. I remember I was at a theater show or something near to my flat, and I remember it, like, I'd worked out that the show would finish around about the same time you'd be walking out for the fight, and I remember fucking trying to run home across the road to get it on.
Thanks.
Yeah, man. I remember that.
And did you succeed?
I think so, yeah. I think I watched it live. Good. I think I had to watch it on, like, my phone or something though, because it wouldn't come up on my TV. It was something funny happened.
That fight wasn't my best fight. It wasn't my proudest fight. Like, I think the gods were on my side a little bit. I've been on the wrong end of the decision in a lot of my career, I felt like. And I think, look, again, from a kind of, like, constructive Thai boxing scoring viewpoint, I think I edged it because I had a few Thai boxing scoring techniques. So, but in terms of a fight, I feel like I lost the fight, and like, it gave me a nice scar on my head and shit. But look, everything happens for a reason. I have the belt up in my cupboard there, so.
Was that fight was it heavier than you normally fight at? I felt like he looked huge, if I remember right.
Yeah, definitely. It was at 70 kilo. I usually fight at 67. I've had a lot of fights at 70 throughout my career, to be honest, but like, I'm not that. I'm actually small for my weight. I've always had, like, I was 100 kilo at one stage, like, I've stretch marks on my arm and my belly. It was mad. I was huge at one stage, but I've always had just, like, I don't know, a heavy set build.
Yeah.
But I always say, like, when I'm fighting, like, what kind of man is you? Even when I fought at 67, but that famous fight where I got dropped by the elbow and I got back up and knocked out your man, Alex Singh, he was massive compared to me, and that was a 67 kilo. I don't think I've ever fought someone smaller than me.
I remember you used to cut quite a lot as well to get to 67, did you not?
Yeah, like, again, like I said, I'm heavy for my size. I don't know what it is, but I right now I'm probably 78 kilo. Like, I'm not in bad shape. Like, I'm training a lot and I'm eating well and stuff. And if you look at me, my top off, I'm in good shape. But I just walk, like, whenever I was at my kind of, like, good training, eating healthy, fight camp start, I was like 75, 76. So I used to cut 10, 9 or 10 to get to 67.
Yeah.
And also, I think a part of the reason why I used to find it hard as well is, like, through my early career when I was like 13 to 16, I had about 6 fights or 8 fights in that time, and I used to cut weight at that age. Like, I did some silly stuff. I think I probably didn't do my body any favors in that sense, doing that shit. Like, but
yeah, I just mentioned, you mentioned there that you thought you had like a, maybe not depression, but like maybe like low mood and struggle for motivation a little bit for that last fight. But do you think maybe in a sense that with all that stuff going on in your personal life, taking a fight and putting yourself into training is a kind of way to shelve things that you don't, maybe don't want to deal with?
Yeah, but I think, no, dead right. I think definitely there is an element to that, but I think, I don't know, but I'm very, like, I've worked a lot on my mind and my mental health and stuff, like, and I'm very aware of, like, I'm always reflecting on why I'm thinking and why I'm feeling certain ways. And, like, I remember I suppose the best way I could put it is I was aware that that wasn't what I wanted to be doing at that time.
That was what it was.
So there was, yeah, I didn't want to be training for a fight. I didn't want to be fighting. That was just it, like, and at the end of the day, it was like, I could try and, like, I was distracting myself. But as well, I fought so many times in my life as well. It was such a weird fight camp. Like, and then there was a few things happened. Like, I actually got, I on the week of the fight, I met a guy called George, who's a director, and he made a short documentary on the fight. Like, and it was like an incredible piece of filmography. Like, he caught the whole story very well. And it's something that's another thing from that fight. Like, besides being the European champion, that documentary that George made, and just like, yeah, I always believe in, like, I have faith in a higher power, and that whatever we have planned in this life will, as long as you have a good intention and you live with a good purpose and try to be a good person, the things will work out. It mightn't all make sense at the time, but when you look back on it, and like, that was one example, but like, I was in no fit state really compared to other fights to step in, but I did, and a lot of things happened that now I look back on as really, really good blessings.
Yeah, good stuff. You mentioned earlier that you've started your own podcast.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, so I have to give you props, boy, because I think the first one who planted a seed in my head was you, because I remember we were at our calf, and I was after making it, and I was buzzing. And I'd say I must have talked for an hour and a half, and you probably fucking tried to stop me about three or four times, and I just kept going. And you were like, you should do your own podcast, boy. You talk a lot. And then it's always been a seed in my head. And a few people have said it to me since, like, because I love chatting. And, like, I just said one day, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to start one by. And then I ordered the equipment and all that stuff. And, like, to be honest, the thing that's holding me back, like, I actually have some very good guests, thankfully. I've been blessed with, like, reaching out to people in the sport that I've met and whatever. But, like, what holds me back is the tech stuff, like, you know, editing audio and editing video and so that. But I'm going to get, there's a few people have offered to help me out with it, like, so I'm going to try to get some help with that. But, like, no, it's called the crack epidemic. So the crack, like, Irish crack epidemic. And I suppose it's a play on words, twofold. Like, you know, you could say the crack epidemic in the sense of I love having loads of crack. So I'm given there's like an overflow of crack when I'm doing it. But also I think in society, there's probably a lack of that. Like, there's a lack of people looking at the lighter side of life. And that's what I want to bring to people's attention. You know, you look at people like fighters, especially, I think they're warriors and in society are people that others would look up to. And when you meet fighters, a lot of the time they're very lighthearted and they're very easygoing and they strive to do something really well, but they don't do it with like this like kind of like tension or stress. And I just want more people to see that, like, you know, to see that there is an easier path to take in life if you try to not just fucking not take everything so serious.
Yeah. How long have you been doing the podcast now?
I did my first one October last year. Then I didn't do any for about 3 months. And I'm about two or three. Then I didn't do any for about 3 months. I went to South America and stuff, and just traveling with my missus. And then I've done three now in the last like week again. So I'm proper pushing it now.
Yeah. And are you enjoying that? Are you enjoying being the host rather than the one being asked the questions?
Yeah, but the problem is, again, because I talk too fucking much, don't I? So I'm talking, I forget that I'm interviewing people, that I'm not talking about myself. But it's good, like, I think once I get, like, I'm learning, you know, it's like anything, the way I look at anything is like that. Like, when I started fighting, or when I started training in Thai boxing, all I had was a bit of raw energy and a bit of a love for it, like, and I do love conversation, and I know I'll get better at it as it goes. I just have to remember, like, you know, I think that wanting to talk and stuff would be, if I can hone it in, it'll be a positive, but at the moment it's probably a bad thing. I'm just talking over people too much, but I'm loving it, boy. It's great. I'm getting, like, I'm chatting to a guy, I don't know, in a minute, James Power. He's a 19-year-old a professional boxer from Ireland. He's the youngest ever professional boxer. He turned pro at 17 out in Mexico. really interesting character. So yeah, just looking forward to chatting to people by and seeing where it goes.
Yeah, I think though that if you, like you just said there, with if you've got that love of something and the kind of the passion to go through and do with it and do it, you'll have some sort of success in some shape anyway.
Yeah, I think another thing I've taken, like a lot of things I use in my life, like values and stuff, I've taken from Thai boxing. And if I could speak to the younger Shane in regards to learning martial arts, I would say don't rush, like take your time. I was always rushing to try and improve, like, and getting frustrated, and like, and it does, that kind of thing does help you improve, but like at the same time you have to remember, like, you know, there's a journey to stuff. Don't be trying to jump to steps and like asking for help. Another thing, you know, that's why I said I'm going to try and outsource the production stuff, because it'll just takes me half an hour to fucking do something that will take some people 2 minutes, you know.
Yeah,
so I'm just going to take my time with it. I'm not looking at like getting a fucking Joe Rogan size podcast anytime soon, but like I'll just keep chipping away because I enjoy doing it, and I do it just to create really good content and see what happens.
Yeah, have you been, so do you plan on releasing quite a few of them whilst we're in lockdown and stuff?
Yeah, like I actually released one there, no, last week from the MMA coach in the gym, Paul Hines. It's on Spotify, it's like The Crack Epidemic, C-R-A-I-C, Crack. And I've done one with Darren Stewart before we fought up in Manchester, and Darren O'Gorman as well. I've done two brief ones with them. I've done one with Greg Wooten that I have to release still. I've done that ages ago, but I'll release that soon. And just hoping to get as much done as I can without rushing it, you know. Without, like, I have a few good guests lined up, like, that I could possibly, like, I have a few friends that I want to call on there now who are in good positions, like a few professional football friends, fellow players for Ireland. So I try to get people to have a bit of a following themselves to come on and see if they can spread the word of it, like, but yeah.
I think it's just about time for you to let you go and do your own podcast, but
I look, honestly, don't yet, but I know I'm murdered for applying and shit, like, but I really appreciate that first time you interviewed me, by it was a really great conversation, and I really was, like, very good to talk to you, easy to talk to. So anytime you want to get me back on, please feel free to holler at me. But do you have my number as well? I'll give you my number there when we go off this, because message me on WhatsApp, it's easier to get onto me, because I'm never really on my Facebook thing.
Cool, we can do that. I just want to say, I remember that conversation, like, the first one, I just remember it was really good fun, but really just like you were mad easy to talk to, just because you were so buzzing, I think, from making weight and the night before the fight.
Yeah.
And just like, I don't know, I think quite a lot of people sometimes are nervous, like you interview them, especially if it's someone you've not met before. But I remember you were just in such a good mood and so positive and so full of energy. It was like one of the, like, definitely one of the best experiences I've had of just like meeting someone, then instantly interviewing them, because it was like, it just flowed. And then I think it helped a little bit that you'd been Aberdeen and sort of knew
the
lights from my gym. So,
that was great to hear, but I really appreciate that, because like it was, I think honestly sometimes you meet people, like I just clicked with you, but I just knew when I met you, you were like a nice person, and we just got on. And that's when things like flow, as you said, like just people are in the same, both of us have the same kind of attitude towards stuff. And yeah, it was really good. But and as I said, I'd love to come on again at any stage. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm hoping after all this, I'll get down to London and hopefully get to, yeah, come train and do another podcast.
All we'll do is, like, if you want to stand 2 meters away from me and I'll hold the pads and you can just, like, try your best to throw jabs and teeps and stuff, right?
Did you see the video of the of Thais doing that in Thailand?
Oh, yeah. I think they were joking.
Yeah.
It's pretty
cool. Oh, last thing before you go, you're doing Zoom classes in Thai boxing at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, but I was going to say, if you want to come along tomorrow morning, I'd like to openly invite you. I'm doing on Instagram Live on Saturdays, I'm going to do a beginner's kind of hit class. Like I'll teach some Muay Thai basics and I'll do some like just hit stuff. That's on this Saturday coming at 11 to 11:30 on my Instagram. But for intermediate and advanced, I'm going to do a Tuesday morning 8:15 class. So I'll give you the details there if you want to come along.
Yeah, I'm up for that. Right, mate. Okay. Thanks so much for speaking to me, and I'll go let you go just now. I'll just stop this recording.
Cheers, bye. Thank you very much.
Hello. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. I'm sure you did. It was absolutely brilliant to speak to Shane again. As we alluded to there, that hopefully we'll reconvene in the future for another episode, hopefully face-to-face. I'd love to go back to London and speak to Shane again. But who knows when that'll happen, right, with all that's going on. I'm not going to speak for too long. thank you so much for listening. Please go and subscribe if you haven't already to this podcast, and also to Shane's podcast, the Crack Epidemic. And yeah, leave reviews, follow us on Instagram, all the links etc. will be there, Twitter. Thank you to Shane, and thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back Friday probably with another previous guest coming back on, so looking forward to that. Okay, cheers, bye.